whoever I am. My name is Russ. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, it's good to be here, guys. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. I'm grateful for that. I'm privileged and really grateful I have an opportunity to be with you guys tonight and share a little bit about my experience with this deal. And I feel like those guys that wrote the book, I know but a little, you know. And, you know, I've gone from knowing this program, this whole deal will kind of screw you up, because when I came in here, I was 31 years old and I knew everything. And now I've graduated to knowing not much of anything. And I probably know less than that, because all my sponsees tell me I don't understand whenever I'm talking to them. So they keep on asking me questions in my opinion, and I tell them my answer, and they say, you don't understand, so I can't be too bright. I'm not, obviously not putting things together well. But in any event, I've managed to stay away from the drink and a few other good things that have happened. You know, they say the great fact is this and nothing less, that we've been, one of the things that happens to us if we do this thing right is that we experience much of heaven, and we're rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And I'm here for that. That's what I like to talk about. I don't want to really talk about not drinking. There's a lot of people that talk about not drinking. Now, not drinking is important. Let's not have any old fool in the back say, Spat says not drinking is not important. You know, if you don't stop the drinking deal, you're probably not going to get any of that rocket ship ride. But the fact of the matter is if you don't get the rocket ship ride, you're probably going to go back to drinking. Or if you don't go back to drinking, you'll just be one of those guys in the back that has 20 years and is hanging in there. You know, and that's 20 years of putting a buck in the pot so you can make it through one flipping day, you know, hanging in there. I didn't want that either. You know, I hung around, you know, they say the man you'll be in the next 5 years depends upon the people you hang out with and the books you read, and I've learned that the books you read depends upon who you hang out with. And I wanted what they had, which I think is a prerequisite to taking the steps. They may not tell you that in the treatment centers. I know in the treatment centers they say, we want you to take, they look at this as sort of like a mathematical equation. You know, take step 1, 2, and 3 before we're going to let you out the door. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm not criticizing that. But, you know, the big book says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get, then you're ready to take the steps. You're not even ready until apparently you formulate some sort of we, some sort of people in your life that you're looking to, and you're saying, I want what that guy has. Now, really, why is that important when you think of it? Because that's really the engine that makes things run. Because the fact of the matter is, if you don't want what we have, if you just want, let's say, what you had, if you just want your wife back, you just want the money back, you just want the job back, you know, you just want your reputation back, you know, you just want the case to be dropped. If that's all you want back, then you just do the little formula. And, you know, one great thing about alcoholics is, since their alcoholic life seems the only normal one, and since they're in intense pain all the time, although they don't realize it because it's their only normal life to feel sorry for themselves and blame other people and feel like it's a struggle and the world's against them, it's amazing how much pain an alcoholic can actually go through and stay sober if he mixes it up with a bunch of recovered drunks for a while and hangs in there for a year or two or three and gets his act together and he gets a lot of stuff back. But you know what happens? Since he doesn't want what we have, and there's nothing he sees there that sort of fuels his desire to have more, have something else that he doesn't have, he just wants what he had. Somewhere along the way, he stops working the thing. He just sort of hangs around in order to not drink. He belongs to that not drinking club. You know, there's two doors in every room. There's the not drinking club. We got thousands of people hanging on the not drinking club, and there's the other door that says, experienced much of heaven and been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. And there's three or four people there. And every once in a while you see a guy move from that door over to from the not drinking club over to the rocket ship club. But very rarely do you see a guy coming from that side of the room over to the other side of the room. And what happens is with these guys, and one of the benefits of hanging around for 31 years, I don't know everything, but I know what, I'll tell you what I know. I know what this thing looks like when people don't work it over a period of 31 years. So that's what I know. You see guys that raise their hands, I got 5 years. You see guys that raise their hand, I have 10 years. I know what it's like to watch people over a period of over a quarter of a century who work this thing or don't work this thing, because I can tell you this, nobody gets away with anything. you can outwork this thing, you can poo-poo the God thing, you could sort of be glib and cool, hip-slick and cool for a long period of time. Don't fool yourself into believing that somewhere around year 25 or year 20, it doesn't get you. This disease is very, very patient, and it's very happy to have you blow your brains out. I've seen it happen with guys 25 years sober when they're 25 years because they're angry. You know, it even says in Vision for You, it says here and there, once in a while, an alcoholic dry at the moment. It doesn't say whether he's got 4 days or 40 years. Dry at the moment. Says, feel better, look better, having a better time. He says, we laugh at such Sally. He says, I'm not going to drink. He says, we laugh that we know he's going to try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll know loneliness as few do. Because all he's got is him and his Ferrari. All he's got is him and his stuff. All he's got is him and his thoughts. Soon he'll try, he'll know loneliness as few do, and then he'll know those three horsemen. He'll be at the jumping off place. You can be at the jumping off place at 15 years sober. You can be at the jumping off place when they tell you you've got cancer, your wife died, or your kid got run over in an accident. They can be a jumping, there's a lot of jumping off places. There's a lot of stuff. The world doesn't stop. The world is a humbling experience. The world is, it's an interesting thing staying sober in the world while the world's turning. So, you know, I like to talk about not just mere sobriety. I like to talk what Bill Wilson spoke about. After many years, he talked about something called emotional sobriety. He said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependency. You know, in a religious sense, we would talk about that's called idolatry. You know, the things we depend upon, that we lock onto, that we worship. I know alcoholics, you know, they shy at the word God. You know, it says that, the bristles in our head. The alcoholics should be the last ones that worry about that, because if having God means you're always thinking about him, you're always worshiping him, you know what I mean? You'll get on your knees and you'll sacrifice yourself for him. Well, then there's no guy in this room that hasn't done that for a woman. You know, unless you have a different kind of alcoholism than I do. Every Saturday night for like 15 years, I was out there. I was willing to go to any length to, you know, do whatever I had to do because they had what I wanted. And I was willing to go to any length to get it. I spent more money I didn't have, charging more things on credit cards to buy stuff I didn't need or pay for stuff I didn't have to impress women, you know, that didn't even like me, or I didn't even like them and other people. So alcoholics should be the last one talking about what you're going to worship something. You're either going to worship your, you know, your body, you're going to worship your car, you're going to worship your job, you're going to worship your bank account. Now, don't tell me alcoholics don't worship. Alcoholics, the only question is whether you're worshiping God or you're worshiping, you know, the dollar. Everybody's worshiping something. It's just a matter of who your God is. But, you know, who your God is has consequences for people like us. So that's why the way I read this book, you know, listen, this is just my take on these things. You know, I mean, I like to think it's scriptural. I'd like to think I take it out of the book. It's what I read, what I've experienced in life. But, you know, listen, this is just my opinion. You don't have to buy into it. You know, it's based upon what I've read and what I've seen and what I've practiced myself. And, you know, the old saying, my sponsor told me, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. So I can tell you from practicing law for 35 years, you know, get a lawyer with experience. You know, if it comes down to getting a lawyer that knows the law or a lawyer that knows the judge, you make sure you go with the guy who knows the judge. It's a little tidbit, you know what I mean? Hopefully he knows the judge and the law, but, you know. In any event, you know, that's what I want to talk about, the things you have to do. And if you look at the steps and if you actually read the book, you know, I like to read things out of the book, it becomes very clear. You know, alcoholics are touchy. I used to say to my sponsor, you know, that old saying, I'm sensitive. I was sensitive. Alcoholics are sensitive. They get pissed off very easily. They you know, you say it the wrong way. You look at them funny. You know, I'm a why don't you love me, a holic? And you know, why are you talking to me that way, a holic? Or you don't know who I am, a holic? I mean, alcoholics are very sensitive. You know, you look at me the wrong way. You say things the wrong way. I turn you off. I mean, I have been to meetings. We were talking about this before, where an alcoholic gets up and he starts talking and he says one word or one phrase that I don't like and I don't even hear the rest of the thing. I just turn him off. Just completely turn them off. You know, don't even hear a word he says. I mean, that's how serious this disease is. You know, could say something that would save my life. I just shut down my mind. I say, I just don't like this guy. You know, that's why we have this saying, you know, principles, not personalities. Because we're so sensitive and we get resentments so easily, and we're so close-minded, and we're not open-minded. We're not skeptical. Skeptical isn't a bad thing. We're cynical. I know if I'm talking to a group, I know like 30% of the group is saying, I don't even want to listen to this guy. He's full of shit. Doesn't matter because alcoholics, we got that great, as I think I said once before, one of the great gifts alcoholics are given is the ability to represent to recognize bullshit. You're sitting. That's all I did. I sat in a bar with another guy, and some guy would walk in on the other side of the room with a good-looking blonde and say, "Look at that asshole." You could just spot him. You know what I mean? Spot all the jerks out there, right? So, you jump to conclusions and all that stuff. So that's the disease. That's the true disease. That's the stuff where it's not the drinking. The drinking is something we use so that we don't experience alcoholism. Alcoholism is what you experience when you're sober. When alcoholism would raise its ugly head, and maybe it feels like boredom. Maybe it feels like excitement. Maybe it feels like having a lot of money. Maybe it feels like having no money. Maybe it feels like I'm the greatest. Maybe it feels like I'm the worst. The same mind that says, I've got him now, I'm a winner, I'm the greatest, that's the same mind where 5 minutes later, I'm the worst. The same mind that says, look at my new car, look how fantastic it is, I'm really on top of the world, is the same mind that tells you when you're driving an old car, what a piece of crap I am. A mind that's constantly either pumping yourself up or putting yourself down, or, you can never be okay the way you are right here. You always need something. If only, my life was always getting ready to be okay, if only. If only this, if only that, and anybody time with somebody would say something to me, I don't even hear, I say, yes, but. I'm an if-onlier and a yes-butter, and that's me, and that's the alcoholism. And, the way alcoholism works for me is I didn't even know it was alcoholism because it's like the right-handed deal. It's just the way I think. The alcoholic life is the only normal one. I'm the blamer. I'm the crybaby. I'm the thumb-sucking crybaby. I'm a self-pity-aholic. I'm all that stuff. What it says, men and women who are restless, irritable, and discontented. Sober. Sober. That's the way we are sober. Not drunk. Drunk, we're feeling okay. Our problem is not drunk. Our problem is we sober up. If we just sort of stay drunk forever and have it, we'd be okay. We're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we're going to get an experience a sense of ease and comfort. That's what we want because we don't have that sober ease and comfort, which comes at once. That's the way it works. You don't have to go to 15 meetings. At once. Listen, I used to get the sense of ease and comfort, you ready for this? Pulling up to the bar. Yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like, I get a sense of ease and comfort if I was on the phone with somebody, he'd say, I'll meet you at the bar. I started feeling better immediately. And I come in here and they're saying, that's the stuff that's going to kill me? It's the only stuff that kept me from blowing my brains out. And I can't blame alcohol for the crap I did to people and the things I did for myself and the mistakes I made because many, I have hurt many, many people and been irresponsible in many, many ways and made many, many poor decisions, just as many, if not more, sober before, after, and during AA than I did drunk, and alcohol had nothing to do with it. I wish I could say it's alcohol's fault. It's not alcohol. The only alcohol did was allow me to live with my sorry self. And tell me I was okay while I was doing it, while I was messing up my life. Listen, I am so sober without something else going on, without some sort of transformation. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an accident waiting to happen. I remember Dr. O used to say, alcoholic addict had this great line. I heard him say once, he says, because he was a doctor. He was an addict, too. He used to write himself scripts. And one of the things he once said, I heard him say, he says, I never wrote myself a script, for whatever it was, whatever the pill of the hour was, that day. They didn't have Xanax then, but Milltown. He says, I never wrote myself a script for any pill where I didn't exhibit the exact symptoms that that pill and that prescription called for. And then he paused for a second. He says, well, I either exhibited the symptoms or I felt them coming on. That was my problem as an alcoholic. I always felt them coming on. You know what I mean? You want to avoid them symptoms, Just give me a double, Just get rid of them symptoms. So I came in here. What did I see? I came in here and I saw some people. I fell in love with people. I was fortunate. I was lucky. I believe it's a godsend. It's a program of attraction. I was attracted. It's funny what you're attracted. I used to be attracted to guys with cars, guys with gals, guys with, there's a lot of, listen, there's some people that come in here, they don't want what we have. They don't even know what they have. They don't want it. And there are some people that come in, they're not ready. They in this group, there's no bar at the door. Nobody's, taking There's no test, you know. You can walk in here ready, you can walk in here not ready. You know, there are people that come in here and they don't want what we have. They don't find anybody that has in here they want. They want what they had. And there are people here that want what they have, but they're just not ready to go to England. They want what we have, but they're just not willing to give up that gal. They're not willing to give up that guy. They're not willing to do that deal. They're not really going to. And then there are people that come in here and they look at somebody and they don't know what they have, but they know I want what that guy has. There's something about that guy. And they, and even though we have that feeling of uniqueness, which I'm going to talk about a little, that absolute certainty that, of course, every alcoholic walks in here with the absolute certainty that they're smarter than everybody else, but that absolute certainty that nobody could ever help us or understand us because we're so unique. So what's the use in talking about it? Because you can never possibly understand me because my situation, my problems, the deal that's going on with me is so different than everybody in the world that you could never possibly understand me, so there's no use talking about it. And everybody comes in here with that deal. And, you know, somehow, some way, maybe you'll meet somebody in here who seems like there's just something about them. You know, it's the way it talks about in the book, Lose Fear of Today, Tomorrow, the Hereafter, Being Reborn. You know, the kind of stuff they talk about in here. You know, the peace of mind people have in here that you see who've been sober many years. You know, how about the steadiness? I like steady. You know, I came from an alcoholic home. You never knew whether my mother was going to be happy, joyful, and gleeful, or whether I was going to find her in a negligee outside lying on the lawn, drunk. You never knew whether everybody was going to be happy or whether she was going to be chasing my dad around with a butcher knife. And usually it was 3 o'clock in the morning yelling. You know, I'm used to craziness. I'm used to waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm used to thinking what's going to happen next. I'm used to worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow or today or an hour from now, or what's going to happen when I get home. You know, I'm used to projecting all sorts of horrible things in my life because I never had any, the word steady was never part of my life. You know, I'm used to getting slapped around, yelled at, screamed at for absolutely nothing, could just go somebody's in a bad mood. And I'm used to doing that myself, just flipping out or something like that. That's what I'm used to. So you come in here and you run into, you know what they have in here? Sure, we have a vast amount of people, because this ain't Well People's Anonymous. Sure, we have basically alcoholics in here. So we got a lot of people here that every day, you know, there's another problem. We're problem people. You know, it's all about, what she's doing, what he's doing. Everybody's, you know, vomiting their problems. But every once in a while, you come in here and you see that one guy, that one gal, and, you know, they're always in a good mood. You know, they're always steady. They're not high, they're not low, they're just like that. And so you think, I would see guys like that, and they usually have like 20, 30 years or something like that. And I would hear their story, you know, they get out talking. There was something about the way they talked and the way they shared that I knew they had the same disease I did because there was just something about them. I said they thought like I did and they felt like I did and they, you know, they had the same disease I did, but they were different. They're different people, just the way they approached life. They were wearing life as a loose garment, and I said, how do you get, I know they got something. They were like fearless. And when I see something like that, of course, the first thing I think of, well, of course, he doesn't have any problems. Well, of course, he must have $1 million in the bank. Well, of course, he's, you know, this or he's that. And then I found that some of these guys were dying of cancer. Some of these guys were, you know, didn't have a lot of money. Some of these guys had all sorts of problems, but you wanted something? Their problems and their circumstances didn't affect how they felt about themselves and other people. And that's amazing. Because I always was flipping out, feeling bad, feeling sorry for myself. My emotional state always depended upon my external circumstances. I always had an excuse for feeling bad or being a crybaby or acting out because I could always tell you that there was nothing wrong with me, you know, because it wasn't my fault. You know, I was this way because I had problems. I could always blame or rationalize my emotional state and how I acted and what I did on the problems in my life. And, you know, there ain't nobody in this world that doesn't have problems. And the only people that do things like that are children. And when I say children, I'm talking about under the age of 10. And don't kid yourself, most stockholics walk in here under the age of 10. They may look 50, but they're under the age of 10. If they, more than likely under the age of 5. And yet on that, the fact that I came in here and I had like 2 neurons working and they were waving goodbye to each other, I wasn't doing too good. So, you know, one of the things, I'm gonna sort of share a little bit on stuff on the fifth step. You know, there's different people that share this stuff around town. I used to go to a lot of step meetings, and people approach them different ways, which is a good thing. You know, I, and, you know, they say, hey, he's like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. So I don't know whether I'll be a wrench today. I'll talk about guys that changed my life. You know, you can read this book, You know, Bill Wilson changed a lot of people's lives, you know, and Dr. Bob changed a lot of people's lives. And, you know, and I'll talk about this one guy in here. I think I've read the story. Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dotson, has a wonderful story. And he talks about the night that Bill Wilson changed his life while Bill Wilson was talking to his wife, Henrietta. He said a line. He said, the Lord has been so... He says, I was trying to find... He said, I knew there was something more, something I haven't got. And I was trying to find the answer. And I was looking at Bill Wilson. I was trying to find out what he had. And he says, and Bill Wilson said to Henrietta, his wife, while they were eating a tuna fish sandwich, he was just talking to her. You know, it wasn't giving any... He says, you know, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful in my life, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about and telling other people. And he says, I think I got the answer. Bill Wilson was grateful that this disease had been lifted from him, and he gave all credit to God. And he said, and he was going to keep on giving credit card and tell other people, and that's why I was grateful. He says, that line was the golden text to me. He wrote that, and he heard that when he was 15 days sober. He wrote that in a story, was 15 years sober. He couldn't stop talking about that one day when Bill Wilson said that one thing. And I give talks all over the world, and I'm always talking about Al Kennedy, among other people, or Joe Snyder. The night I went to a meeting, I saw this guy one time. There were like as many people in the room as here. And he gives this little talk, you know. I don't even remember what he said. I don't even remember what the guy said. All I know is that he was out there talking, and I was looking at it, and I said, man, this guy, he was like a, you know how you like, I was brought up on John Wayne. You know, some of you guys are old, you know, John Wayne and that kind of stuff, you know. And to me, he was like John Wayne. To me, he was like a hero. He was like a man, a real man. He was like a real man, not like me, like a phony man. He was like a real, he was like a real man, you know what I mean? And he was, you know, he was comfortable with his own skin. He was strong. He was, he's the kind of guy, you know, I had these sponsors. Now, here I am. I came in when I was 31 years old. I wasn't a kid. I had a wife who I had divorced at that time. I had a child. I was a division chief in the state's attorney's office trying murder cases, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. So I wasn't like a kid, and I had a lot of responsibility, and I was a typical new alcoholic. You know, the world was really overwhelming to me. I mean, I was not fit, really, for the world. There was just too many moving parts, okay? Before I came to AA, I tried, you know, it says I fought the law and the law won. I tried to conquer the world. I tried to run the world. I did the best I could. Way too much. Too many moving parts. You guys all failed to behave. You know what I mean? Nobody would listen. You know, it just wouldn't. And that's the deal. And the truth is, after I came to AA, I know it says in the book, it says the A, B's, and C's, we're alcoholics and we can't manage our own lives. No human power could relieve our alcoholism. God couldn't. What if he was sought? Well, listen to me. Let me tell you something that I think you probably know. You know the part where it says, being convinced that we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives? Don't you think for a second that even though we say that at every meeting, and even though we're supposed to be convinced of that, don't believe for a second that you actually believe that. Because as soon as you walk out that door, especially during the first 5 years, all you're doing is trying to manage your frickin' life. Either by yelling, screaming, calling, you know what I mean, writing emails. You're trying to figure out how to manage people and manage your life and make them behave and have things happen so that you won't get hurt and you'll win. I know that's true because every once in a while, if things get bad enough, I'll go to a discussion meeting. All they're talking about is how people aren't behaving and things aren't going their way and how they're trying to manage things. All we think about is how come this thing ain't working for me. You know, I did this and I did that. I'm going to try to do this. It's all about what do I do to get this? What do I do to get that? It's all about coming here to try to figure out how to win, how to not get hurt, how to not lose the job. It's all about managing. And as soon as you start feeding them what this thing is really about, it says it doesn't really matter because it's in God's hands. They say, I don't want to hear that crap. So apparently we're convinced, but not really convinced. Well, maybe I got to find a guy. Maybe I can find a gal. No human power could really do alcoholism. Don't you believe we think that for a second? But, you know, to the extent that we finally give in to that and we realize that God couldn't would if he was sought, you know what it says? It says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You know, here, now that's that. It says that in the book. It says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's not me talking. That's our book. This is the book. This is the basic text. It says, if you see to it that your relationship with him is right, great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You want to know something? Do you believe that? Because I'm going to tell you something. When the day comes when you honestly believe that, You'll never have a problem. Ever. Ever. You know, I've had cancer. Cancer's not a problem. You know, I've been in they were operating on me. I've been in operations where I was going to die. You know something? It ain't a problem. I've had some interesting things happen to me, and I've had some wild things happen to other people. You want some? It ain't no problem. You know what Dr. Bob says? He says, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. You know, the Al Kennedy story is after he made that speech and that talk, and he walked out the door, I said to my sponsor, I said, man, that guy's incredible. And I was about 3 months sober, and he says, you know, he's dying of cancer. I didn't think he was talking about Al Kennedy. I thought he was talking about somebody else, because the guy never mentioned anything about cancer. I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I said, the guy who just was up, he was talking. He was telling the story. He says, Russell, he's dying of cancer. He's got like 3-4 months to live. And about 4 months later, he was dead. Do you know how much that impressed? You know, when you're talking about a kid that does 14 meetings because he has a hangnail, you know, and he's used to going to discussion meetings where everybody's sucking their thumb. Do you know what it meant to me to see a guy to do a meeting? I couldn't wrap my mouth. You know what I'm thinking? I'm saying, how do you do that? My sponsors used to say to me, I get all upset and you know about this, that, and the other thing. It says, Russ, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. I said, how could it not bother you? You know, this is a disease that centers in your mind, not your body. The alcohol is really a symptom. You know, if they're drinking all the time and everything like that, we suspect they have alcoholism because they're trying to drink and drive away through booze that which they can't stand to live with sober. That mind that is constantly on the attack with us and being toxic and telling you that you're a piece of shit and that you're unworthy and you're insufficient and you're not good enough. You know, and that's the real disease. The real disease, you know, you get to deal with the real disease after you stop drinking. That's what we deal with here. That's why we have all these step meetings. Okay, now I'm sober. Now how do I grow up and become like an actual adult type person? Where I feel good about myself. What does it say? It says, if you sincerely make such a decision, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his works well. That's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Burn the idea into every alcoholic's mind that he can get well no matter anything as long as you trust God and clean house. Let no man say, wife or no wife, whatever the heck. Let no man say that he can't recover unless he has his wife back. Right? It's nonsense. Job or no job, he says. It's all about your relationship with God. It's all through the big book. It's all about God. And then finally, when you find that burned into your mind and you get up to the 11th step, what does it say? It says, okay, now that you actually believe this deal and you keep on practicing the deal, now you're going to have to improve upon that. And that's what you tell other people about, even though they don't want to hear it. Even though they don't want to hear it, they want the answer to the problem. How do I get my wife back? How do I get my money back? How do I get my job back? They don't want to hear all that stuff about God in here. They want to know, how do they get the job back? How do they get this, that? They didn't come here to go to church. Well, that's what this is. I'm sorry. You don't have to like it, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter. In the end, when everything is said and done, you know, saying a dress rehearsal, we all have our own lives. And what you end up believing, what you end up doing is going to be end up what you get in your life. So you can believe and do whatever you want to do. You can have 15 more years of what you've had for the last 15 years. Or you can have 15 years of what the guys that sponsored me got, or what they talk about in this book, being rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. Said the great fact is this, but nothing less. That the central fact in our lives today is that our Creator lives in our hearts and minds in a way that is miraculous. He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. That's what it says at the end of the promises that they read at all these meetings. He is doing for us what we cannot do. He is doing for us. What we can, your Creator is doing for us. Their Creator, it was a deity. You know, can it be a light bulb? Sure, if you were created by a light bulb, I'm sure it can be. You know, if that's your deal. If that makes you feel better, if it makes you feel smarter or more intellectual by saying you were invented by a tree, then it's a tree. If you think somehow that makes you like better than somebody says Jesus or whatever it is, that's cool. It's okay. Do whatever you want to do. You know, do whatever the deal is. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to tell you what to believe in here. You know, but just, you know, read the words. Decide, you know, it's all about being honest. Honest with yourself, right? Chapter 6, right before the fifth step. I just want to point out to you, the reason I point this stuff out is because I never want you to lose the fact as to why we're doing this. It's not to be psychologically fit or it's not to get smarter, you know, because the smarter you are, the dumber you get. Smart people never make it. Listen, I got degrees on my wall. Tell me how smart I am. You know, my first sponsor who had, like, you know, dropped out of high school told me, you know, looked at my degrees, he said, rectal thermometers have degrees, you know what they do with those, you know what I mean? I wanted everything. I had all these degrees, all this scholarly stuff, incredible IQ, you know, I could do the Schrodinger wave equation, you know, partial differential equations, calculus on manifolds, and, you know, here's the only problem. I wanted everything he had, he wanted nothing I had, okay? So, you know, you take your degrees and shove them, you know what I'm talking about? Some of the wackiest, craziest people I've ever seen bounce out these rules are doctors and PhDs. Because you know something, they just can't get this. You know why? Because they're in love with their brain. The brain that's divorced the wife, the brains that left the kids, the brain that hurts other people, they're in love with their brain. You know, there's intelligent quotient and there's a spiritual quotient. You know, that has something to do with the heart. Having made our personal talent ain't going to do it. Don't tell me, I don't care whether you're talented, greatest singer in the world, greatest comedian in the world. That ain't going to get you anywhere. Dead is dead. Hurting people is hurting people. Having made our personal inventory. So what is this all about? Well, it says it on every page of the book, right before the fifth step. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? What shall we do about it? We've gone through the fourth step. This is what it says. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. That's what they say this whole thing is about. We're trying to get a new relationship with our Creator, a new attitude, and discover the obstacles that's blocking us from that relationship. That's what the whole thing's about. I don't know what, you know, we go to these meetings, some old banana in the back says, I don't want to hear this God stuff. What are you doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? What are you doing here? It's about not drinking. No, it's not. No, it's not. You want to listen. I'll tell you how to not drink. You want to know how to not drink? Go out and drink. Trust me, you'll either die or get in here and you won't want to drink. That's how I don't know how you guys stop drinking. I drank to stop drinking. I think it's a prerequisite. No, I really do. I think in order to be an Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, I'm not making any rules. I think a prerequisite should be that you have to drink to get here. You know? Don't you think? I mean, you know, there may be a few people here that never had a drop in their life and they decided to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, listen, that's the two things that you need to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only two rules. Number one, you got to drink to get here. Number two, once you get here, you're really supposed to stop. You know, a lot of people fall down on the second rule, you know, they don't like that second rule. So in any event, here's the deal. Apparently, part of the problem, now listen, I'm just going to make, I'll make this one statement because I want to make sure I get it in there and then I'm going to on to something else. For some reason, throughout the literature and throughout the book, not that I know anything about this, I don't want you to think that I'm an expert in this, that I don't know anything about what I'm talking about, but I'm just going to tell you, in the 12 and 12 and in the big book, apparently a big deal in staying sober, getting more sobriety, up through the seventh step, you're going to hear it, is something called humility. Don't ask me what it is. I have no idea. Okay? I think I know it when I see it. I probably never had. I think one time I had it. I was going to give my speech on it, but I never do it with a group this small. It has something to do with having a clear idea of who you are and what you are. And it says a person with humility never has to prove anything to anybody anymore. And I don't know what that is because I'm not quite sure how that feels like. Okay, and I know a lot about humiliation. I know a lot about humiliation, which it's my understanding, by the way, that's what you get on the road to humility. So I might be on the right road. You know what I'm talking about? I know how to get to the road to humility, but I don't know anything about humility. I was once at a dinner where they were going to give me the medal for humility, but when I got up to pick it up, they took it away. So, you know, it's a very strange thing, whatever humility is. And humility is a real tough thing to do, okay? Because the reason why I don't like humility is because, like everything else in this program, it's uncomfortable to me. You know, I gave that right hand, left hand thing. I'm right-handed. I like using my right hand. I eat with my right hand. You know, the Bible says if your right hand offends thee, cut it off. I mean, I guess it's another way of saying if there's something you're doing that you love doing and you love it so much, but it's killing you and killing other people, you know, and it's against God's law, it's not righteous, right stand with God, you got to be prepared to cut. Are you prepared to cut it off? Are you prepared to make that sacrifice? Go to any lane. Well, I'm right-handed. You know, if somebody said to me, Russ, this is the bottom line. We know what the answer to your problem. We know what your problem is. Use your left hand. I don't want to use my left hand. I'm uncomfortable using my left hand. We get that all the time. We don't realize we get that all the time. I'd go up to my sponsor. I'd say, I have money problems. He'd say, I got the answer. He says, what's that? He says, earn more, spend less. I wanted option three. I didn't know how to earn more. You know, that probably involves getting another job. I didn't want to work any harder. And I didn't want to spend less. I wanted to spend as much as I wanted to spend, even if I had to charge up stuff. So I always spent more than I made. You spend more than you make, you go into something called debt. But that's okay. As long as they allow you to go into debt, you go into debt. It's not a big deal because you can go to AA rooms to discussion meetings and complain about it and feel better. And people will say, don't worry. And people will say, don't worry. You know, I have the same problem. There's no drinking over it. You won't drink. You'll feel good about yourself. You pick up your medallion, and you'll slowly drift into bankruptcy. And you'll actually think you're doing something, actually be proud of yourself that you haven't had a drink. You know what I mean? But continue to do it, you know? Well, it's like stopping charging. It's like, you know, he says, you know, you're going out with some gal who's a heroin addict. Say, stop going out with that gal. No, I don't want to do it. You know, cut off your right hand. I want to do the things that are comfortable to me. You know, it's easy to do the things that are comfortable to you. Well, the things that are comfortable to me, using my right hand, are the things that are killing me. You know, I used to say to my sponsor, well, that's just my personality. He says, your personality's killing you. Well, I get angry all the time. Yeah, but that's my personality. Yeah, personality's killing you. Use your left hand. So even though I get to the point where I finally listen to my sponsor, which may have something to do with humility, actually listening to what somebody tells you and doing it instead of flipping them off. When I finally listen to my sponsor, I start doing it. My life gets better. You want to know what the problem is? Even though I'm using my left hand, my life is getting better, I'm excited about it, there's always a tendency to use my right hand because I'm a right-handed guy. And that's this disease. My disease, there's always a tendency to blame. There's always this tendency to feel sorry for myself. There's always a tendency for me to say, but it's not my fault. There's always a tendency for me to look at things in a screwed-up way and to rationalize, tell myself rational lies so I don't really see my part in it and that I cloud my true motives. And apparently, one of the problems I have as an alcoholic has something to do with self-esteem. Now, I think we talked a little bit about this last week, and I'm going to expand upon it a little bit more. It has something to do with thinking I'm insufficient and I'm not good enough. Now, we all know, like I've said before, alcoholics, by and large, don't give a crap what other people think about them. You know, because we say that. We say, I don't give a crap what they think about me. But we also know that people that really don't give a crap what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a crap what people think about them. They say, pass the salt or something. They don't say that. You know what I mean? So we know if you've ever even thought, you know, after your bug, you hear, you know what somebody said about you? What? Blah, blah, blah. If you've ever had the thought, I don't give a crap. Just not even mouthed it. If you've ever thought, I don't give a crap what he thinks about me. You give a crap what he thinks about you. That's why you have a bad year. You know what I mean? Alcoholics, as soon as they hear somebody's thinking bad about them, you know, Marlon Brando said that line, if I go to a party, there's 300 people, and one doesn't like me, I got to leave. You know what alcoholics say? They say things like this. Well, I can't go to that party. Why? He'll be there. Well, I can't go there. Why? She'll be there. Alcoholics, no, it's true. Alcoholics, you know, we do whatever we want to do, right? Alcoholics actually, you know, there are states that they can't go into because there'll be a person there. You know what I mean? Yeah, we're strong-willed. You know, we're leaders. You know what I mean? Our whole life is spent worrying about what does he think, what does she think, what does she do. All we do is think about what we think other people think about us. And here's the terrible thing. We actually think they're thinking about us, you know? Yeah, another paranoia. We got the terrible thing. We think everybody's thinking about us, you know? Which, of course, stops us from doing stuff like this. You know what I mean? We're not going to do something like this or be transparent. This would be crazy, you know? I mean, people be talking about you behind your back and all that sort of stuff, you know? Because we talk about other people behind their back because we say bad things about other people behind their back because that's what alcoholics do for recreation. Because somehow, some way, when you feel crappy about yourself, if you compulsively and obsessively say bad things about other people behind their back, especially if you get an alcoholic to agree with you, it somehow lifts you up and makes you feel better. It's called gossip, you know? I mean, we think women do it, but guys do it too. What we do is we say bad crap about other people behind their back, and that's how we live our lives, and we sit around bars doing it, and we talk bad things about other people, and they agree with us, and then they talk things about other people, and that's how we spend our life. And we're compelled to do that, because if we don't do that, we feel crap. It helps us lift ourselves up from thinking about ourselves, and, you know, when we think about ourselves, they're bad thoughts. About other people and about ourselves, they make us uncomfortable. And, you know, we can't stand being uncomfortable. Eventually, you know, what we do is we drink. You know, we just have lousy lives, even if we don't drink. We're just sort of hanging in there, you know what I mean? With that, you know, that sort of low level of anxiety and feeling like crap. And this is sobriety. This is really what you want. So I'm down at the football. So when I was 10 years old, I'm down at, this is a true story, I'm down at the, they used to play sports. And, you know, when I was 10, when I was a kid, you know, the one thing that they, you know, and alcoholics, the other thing about alcoholics, you know, and I know this is true because this is how I feel. This is my life and this is how I feel. And since I've been here for about 31 years doing inventory, you know, saying fifth steps, talking to other people, listening to other people, and sponsoring a lot of guys. And listening to gals, too. You know, you sponsor a lot of guys. You know, it confirms that, you know, I'm not only the only one. Everybody feels this way. And I've learned that, you know, rather than understanding, having the false understanding that nobody understands me because my problems are all different, I now understand that we're all twins. I now understand if I had a thought, you had a thought. You know, I know some crazy guy in the back, oh, he's never thought about eating dead babies. And I said, oh, yeah, I think about that all the time. You know what I mean? So, you know, yeah, whatever thought you've had that you thought is crazy, my God, if anybody heard me say this thought, I'd be, yeah, I've had that same thought. You know what I mean? All the thoughts, all the craziness, all the crap, you know what I mean? I've had whatever you feel, whatever you've accused yourself of, however bad you think you are, whatever piece of crap you think you are, and all of a sudden, I've had the same stuff you have, we all have, which puts you at a tremendous disadvantage to me. Because that means I know you better than you know you. Because you lie to yourself. You see? So that's what the great thing about sponsoring people is they come up to you, they tell you all sorts of things, but you know, you kill them with not the things they tell you because they're lying. They don't know they're lying because they're telling you their story. They got a story that they feel comfortable with. It has something to do with them being a hero, and it's not their fault, and it's the other people's fault, you know. But I hear what they're not telling me, and I see what they're not telling me because I know me. I've been through that, and I know what's really going on and why they really did that. You know what I mean? So then I just listen to them, and I say, well, let me tell you what the real story is. I tell them the real story, and they say, that's not true, and they deny it. And then 5 years later, they say, well, I used to hate you, now I love you. You know what I mean? And then, you know, they get a little better, a little smarter and stuff like that. So it allows you to discern people and see people, which allows you to avoid, you know, it allows you to, you know, it's like I said, you're not spiritually blind. So I'm down there, you know, when alcoholics, one of the things alcoholics want is they've got to be accepted. They've got to be loved. They've got to be loved. They've got to be accepted. They can't be rejected. You know, I mean, that's why we drink when we go to bars. We're worried about what people will think about us, you know, whether the group will accept us, whether they'll laugh at our jokes, whether we can dance with a gal, you know what I mean? Is the group going to like me? You know, I mean, you know, it says fear of people will leave you. Isn't that what it says? And I used to say, well, I'm not scared of people. I used to drink at bars with 300 people all the time. He says, well, if you're not scared of people, why do you always have to get loaded when you're around them? Well, I had to get loaded when I'm around them because I was scared. You know, I'd go in the bar thinking I want to join, I'd like to join the group, and I have a couple of drinks. I thought I owned the group. I thought I was the president of the group. You know what I mean? You know, and so, you know what alcohol does for you? Ask, you know, you drink a couple of drinks and you ask a girl to dance. She says no. He says, you're lost. You know what I mean? I feel sorry for you, you know. So the big thing was being like an athlete. If you were accepted as an athlete, and I was always a very poor athlete. So I go down to the baseball field, and there'd be two teams, you know, like 10 guys, and you 10 guys in the middle, and they start picking. There'd be two captains are the best guys, you know what I mean? I'm like 10 years old, 11 years old. And one guy says, I'll take George, and the other guy says, I'll take Steve. And, you know, as Steve would go, you guys have done this. Steve goes over here, George goes over there, and the group starts getting smaller and smaller, and I'm praying there. I don't even believe in God, but I'm praying. You know what I'm praying? Please don't let me be last. I just didn't want to be the guy they hated the most, you know what I mean? Listen, I would pray to be second to last. Really, if I was picked second to last, it was like, give me a trophy. It's like winning the Olympics, you know what I mean? And it seems to me like I was always picked last. And you know how the guy, little kid's picking, he says, oh, do we have to take them? Like, they'd rather play with one left, less. But what I noticed happened, something happened to me, and maybe this has happened to you, is that when that happened, I felt humiliated and less than. It says, although I wanted to cry and run away, somehow in my mind, and this sort of happened automatically, I knew that if I let them know how badly I felt, something bad would happen to me. So what I did was something very strange that I've done all my life. I acted like it didn't bother me. Like they were laughing at me, I was laughing too, like I was standing where they were, laughing. I was like on the outside laughing. So in other words, I was acting the opposite of how I felt. while I'm sitting there wishing they were dead and I was dead, I would act the opposite. And how did I know that thing that was really a protective mechanism protecting me from them so they could never see what was going on inside of me? I was never going to expose myself to them and get hurt. How did I know that by the time I was 30 years old, that wall would be 5 feet thick and I'd never be able to talk to or let another human being in to let him know exactly what's going on in me? And what's even worse, how would I even know that the wall was so thick that I didn't even know what was going on in me? That I couldn't even see me. And so what happens is I get a guy. So what happens is all apparently I suffer from something called false pride. Not pride. Pride is apparently a good thing. You know, be proud of something and everything like that. But apparently I suffer from something called false pride. Now, I'm not sure what that is, but I guess that has something to do with, is, you know, saying you're thinking you're great, but really being ashamed of yourself. Apparently, I'm ashamed of myself. Apparently, that's why I don't want to share with you. I don't want to tell you what's really going on because I'm ashamed of myself. I'm filled with shame. I feel like you judge me, you'll think I'm a piece of shit. And you know why I feel that way? Because I think I'm a piece of shit. I mean, I may dress nice and everything like that, but you know, in the shower, when I'm lathering up or driving away, you know, I hear me talking to me. I know what my reputation is with me. It says you're a loser, you're an idiot, you're a jerk, you're a piece of crap, you know? So how is a person like that going to have a successful life? How can I even talk to, how can I, and so I'm sitting here and I'm lonely? Well, of course I'm lonely. How can I be lonely? Because I can never tell anybody who I am. I can't even tell myself who I am. I don't even want to tell myself who I am. Because if I start telling myself who I am, I might as well blow my brains out. Because I'm a piece of crap. Who knows me better than I do? And I don't even know whether that's true or not. I just know that's what the voice tells me. And I don't want to share with you that. And I got that stuff really. So I'm sitting here one night and I'm on relay. Anybody calls Dade County for in 8 years on a Friday night, it gets to me. And somebody calls me up, 11 o'clock at night, and says he's a sober alcoholic, he's been sober for years, and he's dying inside, and he thinks he's going to drink. You know, he doesn't know what to do, and blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing. So whenever I hear something like that, it's 11 o'clock, there's still some A, means I'm trying to get him to an A group. He says, you belong to an A group? He says, yeah, I belong to the call room. I said, well, that's my room, that's great. He says, they just finished, they had a meeting there, it's like, you know, from... You know, 10 to 11 or 8:30 to 9, there's still people there. If you get over to the car room, he says, there'll be people there that you can talk to. And he says, I'm in the car room, I'm calling you from a payphone. I said, are there people there? He says, yeah, they just finished the meeting. They're all here. He didn't want to go up to anybody there and talk to them about what's going on. He would rather pick up the phone and call Alcoholics Anonymous anonymously and talk to somebody. But I understand that deal. I understand what's going on. I understand why you feel so ashamed of yourself that you can't even share with somebody else what's going on. I understand how necessary this thing is to humble you. I understand also how difficult it is, how much we want to avoid this thing. And I understand how necessary it is to not only do it the first time, the fifth step, but to develop a way of life where you're living a life where you're constantly disclosing yourself, being transparent. Because I don't know about you, but I don't want to feel lonely. I want to feel like I'm out there lost in the stars. I want to feel a part of. You know, I want to feel good about myself. I don't want to feel crappy about myself. And this is about, you know what it says in the back of the book, Envision for You? It says right here, it says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, the fellowship of the Holy Spirit, the fellowship of the Spirit. Let me tell you something. The only requirement to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is the desire to stop drinking. It doesn't even have to be an honest desire, just the desire to stop drinking. But let me tell you something. There's a different requirement for fellowship of the Spirit. Being in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't get you into the fellowship of the Spirit. That's a whole different deal. It says, we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. But you're not going to meet us. And you're not going to be involved in the fellowship of the Spirit, you know, if you're not willing to talk to us about what's really going on. You know, you're not going to be able to have those spiritual fellowships unless you develop that fellowship with a sponsor, unless you share, you know, on the fist. All that stuff is absolutely necessary, but you know what it is? For us, it's like using your left hand. Because we're not people that share stuff like that, share honestly with people, and actually maybe get honest feedback. We're the guys that are drinking in the bar and talking bullshit about other people and saying, how about those Marlins? without really getting down to the serious stuff. You don't want to hear that crap. You know what I mean? And apparently, and I don't know why, and, you know, apparently that's a God thing. You know, I don't know why this is the requirement. Trust me. If I wrote this book, you know, the road to salvation would be, you know, get yourself a Playboy bunny, a Ferrari, as much money as you possibly can, to hell with everybody else, and stop drinking, and everything will be wonderful. You know, that's not my requirement. Apparently, God's requirement is to get humble, is to humble yourself before another human being. That's what really, that's what alcoholics hate. That's what they really hate. That's what I know they just hate that stuff. When I say, you know what I said to somebody the other day, I don't think it was this group, I said, you want to know what the deal is? I said, I'll tell you what humility is. It's getting a sponsor and then doing what the hell he tells you. How about that? And doing what the hell he tells you to do. Now, listen, I'm not saying I'm perfect at that. I'm not saying I put up a little bit of an argument, but, you know, pound for pound, as I look over my years when I've always had a sponsor, I end up not arguing with them. 90% of the time I say, yes, John. Yes, Joe. You know, yes, Bob. Or, you know, if I argue with him, it's just for a bit, and then I say, okay, and I end up doing it. Once you get a man in your life, you know, don't talk to me about God and how you love God and everything if you don't have, like, a human being in your life. A human being in your life that you don't talk to who says, do this or do that or think this or you're wrong, where you don't decide I'm going to use their brain instead of my brain. Because all that tells me is you're just not willing. That's a humbling deal. Alcoholics don't like to hear that, you know what I mean? Because, you know, there's nothing that a person who feels inwardly and secretly insufficient hates more than to be treated like they're inwardly or secretly insufficient. And the bottom line is, I can tell you this, the most insufficient person in this room is the person who is saying, I ain't never going to listen to anybody and have them tell me what to do. Because when you say that to me, I don't need a sponsor, I'm not going to listen to him or tell him what to do, all you're telling me, all you're saying to me, is that you feel so crappy about yourself that you don't even have the ability to do that. You feel so crappy about yourself that you don't have the ability to humble yourself before another human being. But it doesn't tell me that you're a big shot. It doesn't tell me that you're strong. It tells me that you're weak and you think you're a piece of crap. It's just like when you come up to me and you talk bad crap about other people to me. It doesn't tell me that there's bad. You know, people don't see the world the way it is. They see the world the way they are. When you start talking bad crap about other people to me, all you're telling me is about yourself. You tell me what kind of person you are and what's going on inside of you. You know, you understand what I'm saying? You know, it's interesting. But once you start opening up on the fifth step, and one of the things we do, and we've got like a minute left. One of the things that I've done and I think is wonderful, you listen, I'm not the only one who did this, is once you start getting involved in this fifth step, it's really a template for a way of life. We have a fellowship. We call it the Lost Sheep Fellowship. And we, every day, I mean, I know you find this hard to believe, I have lunch with anywhere between 6 and 12 people. Sometimes it gets as many as 40 people. Like 60 guys get a message to where we're eating lunch. And we just hang out with each other. We got a whole group of guys that just hang out with each other. And one of the great things about this, I would call it easy transparency, because everybody knows everybody else. You know, when you eat lunch with the same guys, you know, 5 days a week, and everything like that, everybody knows. My wife calls them my cling-alongs. She's back there smiling. She says, who are there, your cling-alongs? You know, the Klingons, you know. But you want something? It's amazing. When you're with somebody, it's one thing to go to an AA meeting, you know, for an hour and listen to somebody. When you're eating lunch with these guys, when you're breaking bread, that's what the apostles are doing. When you're breaking bread every day with the same guys and they start talking and they all know each other, and let me tell you something. You'd be surprised the stuff that comes out. They're talking about pornography. They're talking about all sorts of stuff. They're talking about all sorts of problems. They're talking about difficulties they're having. And it actually becomes, when you have a spiritual fellowship, a fellowship of the Spirit, we pray before every meal, it becomes easier. It becomes so easy to share some deeper stuff that's going on in your life, because it's just because you know how your alcoholic life seems the only normal one? Well, let me tell you something. When you're in the fellowship of the Spirit, when you're really in this fellowship of the Spirit, it seems the only normal one. As a matter of fact, it ruins you for cocktail parties. Yeah, but I went to one cocktail party a year ago. It was judicial reception. I didn't want to go, and somebody begged me to go, and I went there, and I was there 5 minutes, and I offended somebody. Did I tell you guys that story? Yeah. Some gal started talking to me that knew me knew me or something and started talking to me about, they were doing what people talk to me, they were talking about a problem or something or an issue. And I looked at her because this is the way I talk. I said, well, that's because you're scared. And she looked at me and she walked away. She was saying, well, I'm just the way I'm, that's the way I'm, you know, she wanted to hear about, you know, how about that weather, you know, or anything. She was telling me about some problem she had with some judge. And then I said, well, it's not judge, you're just scared. You know, and she didn't want to hear that. She wasn't asking me for the truth. She just wanted to gossip, you know what I mean? And I wasn't trying to hurt her, you know, I was just talking like I usually talk, you know. You know, I made the mistake of thinking that she actually wanted to talk to me, but about something, I don't know. You know what I mean? It sort of ruined you for cocktail parties, but you don't want to go to those things anyway. So thank you very much. God bless you.